Live from beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Democrat College professor Mark Costello, Republican commentator Stephanie Hitt, and Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. Our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8029. We come to you tonight from just outside Chicago at the Elk Grove Village Studios of AM 560 WIND. The Answer, that is the Salem station in the city of Chicago. And again, a happy Mother's Day to everyone who is listening and enjoying tonight, and also for those, the many of you who are listening this evening who have lost your mother over the years, remembering and thinking of the role that she played in your life. It's nice to have you with us, but again, we do have to take a moment to think about good old mom, whether she's with us or not. I want to begin this evening by talking about, obviously, the big story is Israel and Joe Biden and President Biden's decision to withhold sending of military equipment and dollars to Israel, because he does not like the way that Israel has not provided a believable plan to make sure that civilians in Rafah are not murdered by U.S. bombs and Israeli delivery systems. So my question to you, Charles, since you're a college professor, you've addressed many times on this program your Jewish upbringing in Marks, Mississippi. We know that the state of Israel is near and dear to you, but as you look at the big, broad picture of where we are in U.S.-Israeli relations right now, how crucial is it, and what happens if Joe Biden decides not to send more weapons to Israel?
I think we're at an inflection point in U.S.-Israeli relations. Harry Truman recognized this state in 1948, but the U.S. didn't really supply any weapons until after the 1967 war. After that, it was a major bipartisan agreement to support Israel. And what you see is that Joe Biden is taking a very different tact. And the best way I could describe it is I think he's jumping halfway across a canyon. He won't satisfy, I think, the anti-Israel wing of his own party. He won't satisfy the pro-Israel wing, not only of the Republican Party, but of many independents. It's an overwhelming support for Israel. But I think it's also a strategic mistake.
But because of the bipartisan nature of U.S.-Israeli relations in the past, since 1948 and forward, there has not been, at least at the political level, or certainly in the street level, any opposition to the strength of Israeli support. Israeli support, the Republicans give it to them, the Democrats give it to them. Jewish support has gone very far in the capital of the United States, because a lot of Jews are involved politically, and they have used their support for Republicans and Democrats wisely, so there has really been no opposition in previous years. Would you agree with that summary of, from the political standpoint, where we are?
I think that's largely right about the U.S. population. There was certainly substantial opposition within the U.S. State Department and other portions of the U.S. government. But there's been increasingly close cooperation, especially between the two militaries, because Israel has a very sophisticated military. And it's worth noting that what Biden has paused was voted overwhelmingly by the Congress. So he's going up against something that's very important. But I don't think Democratic senators, for example, maybe some House members, but most Democratic senators and House members will be very reluctant to oppose the president because they think it will undermine his reelection.
Mark Costello, do you support what President Biden is doing, or do you think he should rethink it?
it's, you know, to pick up on what Charles said, it seems like too little too late to me to change his course like this. He's been coming out saying he's got this ironclad support for Israel. Now he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. As Charles said, people who are anti the killing of civilians that's been going on, this is not enough. 3,000 bombs is not enough to stop the damage that's already been done. So it's just going to make President Biden look weak. He would need to take a stronger stance, and he should have taken it sooner if he wanted to take a leadership role in this.
Stephanie Hitt joins us this evening. She's our card-carrying Republican.
Well, you know, it's funny because I've been giving a lot of thought. Like, watch it, you know, today, Biden made that comment in the CNN interview that he was willing to withhold weapons.
Right.
Anthony Blinken came out today and said, no, there's, you know, we're still continuing to supply. We're doing all of these things. So we're getting a lot of mixed messages. What we're seeing right now is an administration that, in a positive way, people are describing it as saying walking a very thin tightrope between these two parts of the party, that somehow you can be both pro-Israel and pro-Palestine.
Can you be?
That's a good question. Or are they mutually exclusive?
How do you feel about that?
I'm pro-Israel all the way on this. But what I'm seeing is it's not, you know, they're trying to describe them as walking a tightrope or trying to thread a needle. But the way that I look at it, especially as an outsider, a non-Democrat especially, I think the imagery that comes to mind when I see how Biden is handling this is, you know, the windsock that sits in the used car parking lot, the guy that's flipping around in the wind, and 1 minute he's down here and has no full control. He's responding completely to the wind and the forces on him, and you don't know what to expect next. That, to me, describes how I feel watching this administration trying to somehow coddle this far-left wing of their party when in defying and openly defying what has been U.S. policy for decades.
Charles, do you believe that this is about the political equation as it relates to primarily the state of Michigan and Minnesota?
Absolutely. For Joe Biden, that's the two-state solution. If this had happened 10 years ago, I would have said, no, it's really about is making sure that you don't lose an alliance with Saudi Arabia, maybe Egypt, and some of the others. Quietly behind the scenes, they want Hamas wiped out. They can't say that publicly. And what's happened with the confusion here is that it actually strengthens Hamas. But I think the thing that's been missing here is that we're hearing reports that in order for Biden to supply this, he's giving Israel an incentive. We'll tell you where our intel says that the terrorists are and where they're holding hostages. The idea that we're holding that out is just outrageous.
Yep. That's according to a published report today. When we come back, I want to talk more about this. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. The support for Israel in this particular case, you support it or are you want to pull that support back? I'm Bruce Dumont.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows. But the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. When you need me, I'll be by your
side. This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hurd-Garris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back with our Mother's Day edition of Beyond the Beltway. Nice to have you with us. Charles Lipson is here. Charles Stephanie Hitt is here. And Mark Casella is here. And before the break, or during the break, Mark, you wanted to make a point.
Yeah, I was looking on Facebook, and one of the listeners said, you know, no, Joe Biden really just cares about the Palestinian people. He sees the suffering, and he's legitimately acting there. But, you know, one thing I've noticed is, Secretary Blinken's been talking about the investigations that are ongoing, but I think the reason you've seen this kind of uprising at campus, because the information's still getting out to the public. We're seeing what's happening in Gaza. You've got millions of people displaced. There's no homes to go back to when this ends. And so, you know, there's some serious problems that have to be addressed. And again, Biden, I think, is acting here. You know, his heart may be in the right place, as this listener suggests, but I feel like it just politically, it's an unwise move. He's looking. It's a mixed message. It's
how
bad policy.
How strong should the United States be in saying to its allies, whether the ally is Israel or the ally is Ukraine? Because we could turn back the clock about a year from now or a year ago, and again, Zelensky was saying, well, thanks for your weapons, but that's not really what we want. We want this. And the United States was not providing this was aircraft, as I recall. So when you are an ally of the United States, does that represent to the world that we as a nation, we're going to follow the political will of our people? And in this particular case, there's a growing number of our people, Americans, who are demonstrating they don't like the way in which we are helping Israel conduct its war, whereas in the case of Ukraine, we've made the Ukraine leadership, we've made them wait a long time for things that they want. So, you know, I mean, when you have a relationship with the United States, should that be a blank check that you get whatever you damn well please?
I believe we have different classes of allies. And
okay.
I think Israel.
What about the ones that are in wars? What about the ones that are in wars?
Well, I think it depends on the status of that ally. I mean, we are allowing. I mean, Ukraine has not been a long-term ally. We aren't necessarily connected in terms of principles and foundational ideals and things like that. It's the history of Ukraine is fairly new as an independent country. But our ties to Israel are so deeply grounded in the fact that it is the only democratic state in the Middle East, and that and the reason for the existence of Israel is so comports to what we as Americans in our foundational principles believe in the freedom of a people to be self-determining and so on.
But Stephanie, does that mean, I want to get everybody's reaction to this, does that mean to you does it mean that you give Israel everything they want and you let them do whatever they want with whoever they want, whenever they want, and we as the United States, all we do is continue to feed their needs?
No, it's not a blank check, but, and Biden said this at the beginning, it is something to which we entrust the lead be taken by Israel.
Okay. Charles, where do you come down on that same question that I just asked Stephanie? Should it be a blank check when the United States supports an ally?
I think the critical point is the U.S. has to look at what U.S. interests are. And I think I disagree with my friend Stephanie over Ukraine. I think our interest there is in stopping Putin, even though I think there are a lot of problems in Ukraine. But I think there would be more problems if we don't stop him. I think our interest in Israel is both positive, as Stephanie said, it's our strongest ally, it's the only in the region, it's the only democracy in the region, but it's also the only state that is really fighting terrorism in the region. And if the terrorists win with backing from Iran, that's a very bad thing. And I should just add that I don't think that the administration has still figured out what it's doing with Iran.
Yeah, I wanted to pick
your
up
reaction.
On that.
Your response to my initial question, should it be a blank check when the United States has a foreign policy relationship with an ally? Should they get whatever they want whenever they want it?
So historically, thinking back to what Charles had just mentioned, you know, Israel's played this role in being the police of Iran for us. And it was like, if we want something bombed, okay, we're going to have, you know, Israel do it for us and at our behest. And I think that's where things have kind of shifted with this war. I really feel like we're in this post 9/11 moment for Israel. And it's kind of like, you know, 9/11 was a horrible thing, right? Does it excuse the torture that happened on our watch in Iraq, the displacement and the killing of Iraqi civilians that happened in the wake of that? I feel like we're watching that in small scale here in Palestine, the unintended consequence, the emergence of what comes out of the vacuum that's created, the power vacuums we're creating, the civil war, the broader regional conflict. It's just such a complicated place. So I think back to Charles' point, when we're thinking about our strategic interests internationally, that's why you need those allies. That's why you need those multilateral agreements and NATO involvement. So it's complicated. But I do think in the case of Ukraine, for example, we acted too slowly, and that was Congress dragging its feet on that, and now we're seeing Russia take back territory.
I would say one thing about the fact that we did nothing when Iran bombed a major oil installation in Saudi. This was under Trump. That set the stage for Saudi Arabia and its allies to begin looking to Israel as the strong partner in the region rather than looking to the United States. And that set the stage actually for the Abraham Accords, something that President Biden actually refused to say the name of until I think the last couple of months. And but that was clearly the right thing. But the Abraham Accords were directly aimed at containing Iran. And I don't think the Biden administration has figured out what it wants to do with Iran.
Now, Bibi Netanyahu has said recently in the wake of the decision by the president, he said, you know what, Israel may have to do this alone. We can do this alone. Can they do it alone? And if they can do it alone, let them do it alone. Charles?
I don't know what their weapons store is. They certainly have the commitment to do it. They have a skilled enough military to do it. And the country was built since 1948 on the idea that we're not victims. It's the opposite of the way campuses are built now. They're built on the idea that everybody is a victim. And Israel is built on the very opposite notion. We're strong enough to defend ourselves. As one of the Israelis said after Biden threatened to cut this off, if we have to fight him with our fingernails, that's what we'll do.
Would a President Trump, how do you think he would respond if he was in office now? How do you think he would be responding to this?
For one thing, I don't think he would be threatening Israel with a cutoff of weapons.
Nor do
but
I.
I think most of Trump's foreign policy is really undetermined. He's clearly interested in throwing up protectionist barriers, but we don't know how much of that is a strategic negotiating idea. If China won't let us sell to them, then we're going to put up barriers against them. I think that he will substantially change our policy, but I don't think what he'll do is get us into wars. And I think his uncertainty that others have about how they think he's strong, but they don't know what he'll do. And I think that's a very strong deterrent message, actually.
Is because it has been reported that Donald Trump really is not a big fan of Bibi Netanyahu now, because Bibi Netanyahu acknowledged that Donald Trump had lost the election and that he congratulated Joe Biden. So we know that there's this personal, it's been well publicized, this personal peak that he has had. If you were an American Arab leader, political voter, would you gamble that maybe you would get a better deal with President Trump than with President Biden? Because they would know that whatever Israel is going to try to get, whatever they can, but Donald Trump is going to be there and he's going to make life miserable for Bibi Netanyahu. Does anybody buy that as a reason to give Trump a chance?
I think that, you know, just like we saw the role in the Abraham Accords, and it'll be interesting to see how much of a role Jared Kushner would play in a second Trump presidency. I don't know that he has the same personal feelings about, you know, not liking Bibi, not you. We know that Donald Trump has a thin skin.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't, you know, there's just certain hot buttons with him. However, I think when you have people like Jared Kushner, you know, helping manage that situation, I think that that is going to be the greatest influence. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, building on the accords, Trump didn't bring in other countries to help come up with a solution. And that's where we get into what's going to happen to Gaza if Hamas is gone and who rules. Could there be a regional allied solution in terms of what happens to this region?
I want to get your reaction, Mark. If the music is playing, that means we got a break for some spots. 1-800-723-8289. Wherever you're listening around the United States this evening, happy Mother's Day. If you want to weigh in on this conversation, do give us a call. 1-800-723-8289 around the world and border to border and everywhere. Bruce Dubon, Beyond the Beltway.
This is Ed Morrissey at hotair.com for Town Hall. Angry that Israel wishes to win the war that Hamas and the Gazans started, Joe Biden announced that he would withhold weapons from Israel until they stop trying to attack Hamas, where they have hidden themselves, in Rafah. Just a couple of days after claiming to remember the victims of October 7, Biden wants to force Israel to let the perpetrators of the massacre off the hook. While claiming to support Israel and oppose terrorism, Biden cited civilian casualties as his reason for suspending the transfers. Hamas deliberately hides among civilian populations for this very reason, a war crime and a terror strategy that Biden has now validated by blaming Israel for the casualties. And Biden has done all this without any pressure on Hamas to return hostages, including Americans. 3 years ago, Biden betrayed our allies in Afghanistan. Now Biden wants to abandon American hostages and 9 million Israelis to Hamas and Iran. Biden is an utter disgrace. I'm Ed Morrissey.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont, we continue with Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us this Sunday night. We are here every Sunday night, right where you are watching or listening to this program, whether it is on a talk radio station, you're driving from place to place, and that's one place to hear us. We're also live on Facebook. We're live on YouTube. A lot of people, I say a growing number of people, are watching us on YouTube. So if you want to befriend us wherever you are, to be a friend of Beyond the Beltway, that means a lot to me personally, because I really need friends. But no, it's nice to have you with us if you're a friend out there. And again,
I like you, Bruce.
Well, that's good. Everybody likes to be a friend. Yeah. By the way, before I get to the point of asking everybody to introduce somebody, it gets back to the fact that we are hearing in this salacious testimony of Stormy Daniels is that Donald Trump admitted that he and his wife sleep in separate bedrooms, made a point of that. There may be a lot of people that think that is suspicious, but I don't think necessarily, because I think there's probably millions of longtime married people that don't sleep in the same bed and may not even sleep in the same bedroom. So I don't think that's necessarily odd. But what I'm thinking about is, here's a guy of advanced age, and politically and personally, he is getting the hell beat out of him.
Yeah.
I want to ask you first, Stephanie.
Yes.
Does Donald Trump need a hug? I mean, after this court every day.
Right.
I don't think he's going back to Melania and getting a hug. Does the guy, psychologically, does he need a hug?
I think he gets his hug from 80,000 people at a rally in New Jersey. I think that's where he gets that feeling. But okay. I also think, and we're talking about Mother's Day, I actually think he has very, very good relationships with his family and his kids. And I think that he has that very strong support network with his own kids.
Charles, what do you think? Does Donald Trump need, with all that he's gone through for many, many years, does the guy need a hug when he gets home from court?
I think most of us, when we get a hug, we kind of let down our defenses to let the hug in.
Yes.
I don't think Donald Trump ever does that. I heard an old joke about him, which I will clean up, where he's coming down in an elevator and a beautiful supermodel gets in and starts groping him. And it gets more and more intense, and he finally stops her and he says, "I'm sorry, what's in this for me?"
He's a well-known germaphobe.
Beck, this is a very personal. You're not going to have your this. Kristen Welker on Meet the Press is not going to ask this question. So, what do you think? Does Donald Trump, as a human being, even if you hate Donald Trump, and I don't think you do. But if you hate Donald Trump, can you acknowledge that as a human being, the guy probably needs a good hug?
Yeah, I mean, he's been attacked so long in so many ways. And I've said before on the show, Bruce, that I'm no fan of Trump, but it's actually made me sympathetic for him because I think the media has just gone too far. I can't even listen to MSNBC anymore. It's just been 24-hour Trump attack for years now, and there's not even any content to the program. And there's lots of important progressive issues I'd like to hear discussed, and I don't. Right. It's just been on this Trump bashing.
Trump derangement syndrome.
But that issue that Mark raised is really interesting because a lot of people have been asking if the trials, which seem unfair to a lot of people, have actually built up support for him. Mark, do you think, is your feeling shared, do you think?
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up, Charles, and you may know some of the research on this, but also as far as I know, aside from the trials, I think are helping garner sympathy for him, and he's definitely fundraising with them. But also the idea of virility. When you have a candidate, this might seem salacious and scandalous, but historically, from what I've read in studies, those kind of scandals can help candidates because they seem powerful, they seem, you know, virile, you know, they're alive, and you know, maybe in the subconscious of voters that motivates them, or they respect those individuals in some way. But there's something there too, I think, that could be an unintended help to Trump.
Well, I was going to sort of
say,
do
you agree with it?
Well, I actually do. I actually, you know, I've done your program for years.
Yes.
He was like my 17th choice for president and so on. But he. But, you know, you sit there and you think, there's no human that could take everything that they have been throwing at him, and
that's
yet he doesn't. And yet, at the end of the day, he'll go over and order pizzas and hang out with the fire department. And he looks jovial and happy. And I think that's where he gets his love. He genuinely seems to love that. But I will say this. I actually think the gag order is helping Donald Trump.
I agree.
Because what have always been the biggest criticism is all his ad hominem attacks, his meanness, his nastiness. When he comes out now, he actually talks about the issues. Mm-hmm. He's talking about the economy.
Some days.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know. But the point is, it's actually, I wish they would keep the gag order even after the trial because it is making him a more focused speaker. And he's zeroing in on he's getting down into one or two sentences, even a word or exactly the soundbite he needs to do to pinpoint all of Biden's failures. Mm-hmm. And he's doing it very effectively and very well.
One follow up on your comment. I have not watched MSNBC much this past week. Mm-hmm. However, I have watched CNN at times. And I would say, and I said this before the show, I think CNN is doing a better job of analyzing the Stormy Daniels Donald Trump trial than Fox. First of all, Fox is sort of ignoring it, which I think is a mistake.
Yeah.
And when they don't ignore it, I mean they just go over the top. It's the Sean Hannity cheerleader approach.
Yeah, it's Sean Hannity.
But I do believe that when I watched a couple of days when I watched the analysis on CNN at night. Not during the day, but at night, I thought their analysis and their treatment of the Stormy Daniels testimony, salacious as it was pretty well handled under wraps. They did quote some of the things that were said,
right.
But the overall view was that in this particular case, Donald Trump may be winning this because of all this other stuff that's going on, and no one is getting back. They even said this. No one is getting back to what crime,
mm-hmm.
if there was a crime committed.
Well, and
what was the crime? Because if it's just about Stormy Daniels telling a story about how she slept with Donald Trump, that's old news. That was news in 2012.
Right, and that's not illegal.
And the American people voted on it knowing about it.
Well, here's the other thing. One of the things, and when we talk about the media, and we talked about this before, is CNN... is starting to sort of, at least in some sense of sanity, at least ponder the possibility that Trump could win and what that would look like. I think they have realized that they will look foolish if they do not at least prepare people for the fact that he could win. Because in the event he does...
Yum.
The extreme liberal media will look ridiculous.
I think I agree with that. Not MSNBC, but CNN.
Exactly.
I think they're
preparing people for that possibility.
Before I mention people driving from coast to coast and border to border when this show is on the air, and we have Alfonso, and he's on the highway in Missouri. Alfonso, how's the traffic
place,
in Missouri?
Charles.
Oh, the weather is great here, and things are going great.
Great.
You made a comment, I guess you all made a comment, I should say, what will Trump have done for supporting Israel? I believe that he would have supported Israel all the way, because you got to remember, he was the one who brought the embassy back to Jerusalem, who said that that was their place, you know? Mm-hmm. And another thing that, like seems to me, a lot of people are missing, the war in Ukraine. Biden was asked on TV, what would he do if Russia attacked them? Biden said if they only attacked a little bit, I should say invade a little bit, he would do nothing. So he opened that door.
Yes.
Yeah. You're right.
Well, Mike, I want to ask you, Alfonso, a question.
Yes, sir.
If Donald Trump was the president now, you were talking about what he would or would not have done, you know, had he won the last election. So my question to you is, right now, if Donald Trump is the president, or if you were the president, what would you be saying to Israel about whether or not you would be releasing, you know, 2-ton bombs that could be dropped in a heavily populated area that could kill thousands of people? Is that a good use of U.S. Military might to give that power to Israel? Yes or no?
Sir, let me... I can say yes, but there's more to that.
Okay.
Can I explain?
You can.
Okay. Now, the reason why I say yes, let's go back to World War II and when America dropped the bomb in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
That stopped the war.
Right.
Same thing.
It did.
First of all, they attacked Israel first. And then Israel at least is telling the people, get out because I'm coming in. And to me, that's insanity. I mean, true, those people shouldn't get hurt, but we got to remember who put the terrorists in power in that area. Those people who lived there did that. So if they did that, that means they're supporting them people. So if they're supporting them, they're just as bad as everybody else over there.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing we don't quite really know. Obviously, to what extent are those Palestinians supportive of Hamas? You know, we have a lot of people saying that they should be supported. We have college campuses filled with people saying, you know, Hamas should be supported. Back shortly, Alfonso. Keep your eye on the road. Back shortly.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
Today, millions of people all across America are building a life in recovery from addiction and mental illness, helping themselves.
And helping each other, with friends, family, and community lending their strength and support.
Join the Voices for Recovery.
Together, we are stronger.
For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral for mental and substance use disorders, for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school? Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Bruce went back, and we continue. And during the break, Mark Costello was telling us about what he does when he's doing his professorial work. And tell us a little bit. Tell that to the audience. It's kind of an interesting story about this is something that's positive that's happening on a college campus.
Sure, I teach a like a sophomore level academic research writing course, and my impetus behind the course and my philosophy behind the course is teaching students to dig deeper and do their own kind of research into sort of lesser studied things. Sometimes they're historical events, and I have them reading old newspapers, and I make them get corroborating evidence so that one source is not enough. Give me multiple sources and document that. And the goal is really to get them to have some discovery. So they're reading about history that certainly is overlooked or forgotten or has been silenced, or sometimes they discover a monument in their own neighborhood to like a labor conflict that happened that they didn't know. So,
thanks very much. That's a good insight into what you do when you're not here. Charles Lipson, I want to go back to you because the University of Chicago has been in the news for those around the country, given the disturbances or protests that are there. You're there. Give us your view up close and personal as to what has been happening on the campus of the University of Chicago and what the future might look like there.
We had an extensive encampment, and people should juxtapose that to the fact that the University of Chicago has for many years been a leader in the free speech and open discourse movement. The question is, when does that cross the line? And it crosses the line when it becomes intimidation, when it takes over public spaces against the rules, when the shouting is loud enough to interrupt classes. All of that began to happen. And unlike Northwestern, which not only negotiated with the people in the encampment, but ended up making really major concessions to them, a number of scholarships to Palestinians and a professorship and other things. The University of Chicago at a low level had some people listen to the demands, which were, of course, outrageous. You know, they wanted sea levels to stop rising and, you know, everything they could throw in. But in the end, it was all removed. And it was removed by the University of Chicago police. The campus looks great now. But it was really disturbing. And the encampment people, for example, had lectures zoomed in by people who'd been convicted in the United States courts of terrorism. That's mm-hmm. who they were listening to. And there were professional people on campus teaching the students how to do these provocative acts.
If you spent 30-plus years at the University of Chicago, as my memory serves, if we were to put all of the professors who support Israel and all of the professors that support a Palestinian state or have been critical of Israel over the years, what would those numbers look like? Would they be even? Would they be one-sided? What would you say?
I think the best way to look at it, Bruce, and I don't know the numbers if we were to take a survey, mm-hmm. But I would say this. In the humanities, the English department and French literature and so forth, everybody supports Palestine. Nobody supports Israel. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm on a free speech listserv where people talk about this. And after the police did a nice job, I thought, we sent a letter of thanks to the police. And you could sign on or not sign on. And literally, in this long list of signatories, there was one person from the whole humanities division. There were a lot of people from the med school. There were a lot of scientists. There were some economists. But the soft social sciences and the humanities were just not represented. And that, of course, is deeply linked to what's happening in our teaching, starting really now in middle school.
For those who are listening to the program this evening who may not have experience in academia, either as administrators or as professors, a question that I would ask in, for them would be, if you were the president or the chancellor of a university, can you fire people if you don't like their teaching philosophy or their teaching slant? Is that considered,
first of all,
legitimate or not?
The president almost never engages in that kind of thing. The number two person in the university is usually called a provost and is the person who looks sort of at what's happening inside the university. But if you're tenured, it's almost impossible to fire you unless they shut down the whole department. If they shut down departments, and that's been done in some schools because there's simply nobody anymore majoring in English in at a major university like Chicago, we're not going to be shutting down departments. But even in the case of one that we shut down maybe 20 years ago, we kept all those professors as tenured professors. But more and more professors on campus are not tenure track. They're just hired temporarily. And those people can be let go. But you can't fire people unless they've really violated rules. I mean, that's going to be true in, I think, almost all universities.
Yeah, I would just add, Mark, you know, for the layperson, you know, what's most disappointing for me out of this whole experience has been the academy is the one place we're supposed to be able to have these conversations in a civil way, in a educated way, in an informed way. And I think there was really just a missed opportunity by the students, by the administration, by the way this was handled, and a naivete on, you know, an understandable naivete on the part of the students where they've seen this civil disobedience in the past and they've seen the outgrowths. But when you're staring down a billy club coming at you, or you have undercover police, for example, potentially infiltrating your encampment, there's just we didn't have the conversation we could have had.
I want to follow up on that. We do have to break. We've got another hour coming up. I want to pick up on that particular point. And I also want to pick up on the point that many of the protesters are saying to their colleges and universities, we don't like the way you're investing your money. and they usually have very large endowments, and they're basically saying, we don't want you to invest in companies that perpetuate, you know, the Netanyahu administration in Israel or whatever the case may be. When I come back and with our guests, I want to delve into that as to how legitimate a question that is. Went back on Mother's Day 2024. I'm sure all the florists and the restaurateurs around America who listen to this program are counting their proceeds this evening, as it is one of the biggest days for. I think it's the biggest day for restaurants and one of the biggest days for florists. I said before the break that one of the issues that has come up in the narrative of what's happening on American college campuses is that many protesters have said to their universities, we want you to divest of your support for Israel, or companies that support Israel, we want you to divest from that. And again, we haven't heard too much about that. It was something also that was used during the Vietnam War era. It also was used post during the Vietnam War era, when a lot of college campuses and colleges were told to divest from South Africa. So my question, I'm going to start with you, Charles, because I think you've got the biggest, you have the biggest college endowment. So we want to talk about, let's talk about the University of Chicago endowment and how much input, if any, should either professors or students have in how that university invests its money?
In practice, they have almost none. The only way in which they have real influence like this is on a whole series of decisions. They could, in effect, call a vote of no confidence in the president or the provost. And while that wouldn't boot them out, it would severely undermine their position. But in point of fact, I think no university has agreed to this. And the only one that has even agreed to consider it, I believe, is Brown. But I thought that was, they agreed to have meetings in the fall to discuss it. But I thought that was just kicking the can down the road. Modern portfolios are deeply intertwined and they're international. And I can tell you that if you decided to divest from Israel, people would say, well, wait a minute, what about China? What about Russia? What about all these countries where there are obvious human rights violations? And I think there would be no end. It would be pulling on a sweater made out of slip knots.
Is it your view, however, that as far as a touch point or a pressure point, that's not a bad pressure point for students to focus on? Because the average person who does not know about the hundreds of millions of dollars that are being held in college endowment funds, they don't know the decisions that are made, how those funds are invested, that it looks like something that maybe would make some common sense to an average voter, maybe someone that's not on a college campus, but to an average voter that would say, you know what, that makes some sense. If you're going to invest in A, and we think that A is supporting B and we don't like B, what's wrong with pressuring them to divest from them? Because, you know, frequently we have boycotts of institutions and boycotts of companies that people are asked to boycott because they don't like whether or not, you know, a fast food restaurant is open on Sunday or not.
There's nothing wrong with putting pressure on. You or I could disagree about what the pressure is about.
Right.
I just don't think that it will have much of an effect. I think it's a kind of virtue signaling. I can also say that a former president of our board was the late Jim Crown, and they are the major stockholders in General Dynamics. The chances that we're going to disinvest from companies that are legally making weapons that have been authorized by the United States Congress and signed into into law by the president. I mean, it's a hard row to hoe, but I think that they put these demands there as part of a kind of log roll among the students. One student says, I don't want any investment in oil and gas. And another says, I don't want Israel. And another student says, we need more scholarships for Palestinians. And what's the incentive for any group negotiating internally to say no to any of them?
Mark, does this make any sense to you from a student's perspective? No, this looks like a legitimate thing for them to do, even though we know that the powers that be at colleges and universities are going to dismiss these students.
Well, you know, part of my displeasure with the coverage of these protests has been, you know, it was all about where's their violence breaking out. And I think the boycott, divest, sanction movement, having clear demands on the part of the students, I thought was wise. And it gives a space of where they're acting locally, trying to affect a broader issue. I heard them characterized as just, they want to holler. You know, I think it was on Bill Maher's Real Time, the guest said, oh, these are just people who want to yell and just scream and have their voice heard, and that's what it's about. So I thought it was a good point. And at these research institutions, you know, we're digging into the deeper question here, which is we have a militaristic foreign policy, and we have two presidential candidates that, you know, are essentially both pursuing fairly aggressive militaristic solutions to international diplomacy. And so I think these students pointing out some of these connections, the research, it's very hard to disentangle, though, you know, as Charles pointed out. Everybody's invested in these index funds, and
but they also want to stop all academic exchanges with Israel.
Right.
This is all part of a delegitimation strategy.
Right.
They want to make Israel toxic.
But you know, this, you know, growing up in the 80s, this just reminds me of the boycotts against Russia. You know, it's a pressure tactic that really comes from a lot of conservative activism, actually.
Charles, one thing also that's happened on campuses, at least the way the narrative has been reported, is that a lot of these demonstrations have become anti-Semitic. Now, as a Jew on the campus of the University of Chicago, to what extent do you think this aura of anti-Semitism, is it real and is it growing?
It is real, it is growing, but it's not pervasive. But you saw today, Sunday, Jerry Seinfeld gave the commencement address at Duke, and students walked out. And the only reason they walked out was because he was Jewish. I don't think that that has ever sort of thing happened in the 50s, the 30s. This is just unprecedented. The good news was that others booed those students who walked out, but they should be photographed and it should be part of their employment record as employers look forward to having such people on the payroll.
Stephanie?
I think that's what's been the most shocking thing at all, is the blatant and open anti-Semitism, to watching these students yell and scream the most vile things to Jewish students. And we have it all on tape. We saw what happened at UCLA, and, you know, girls, you know, kids are getting beaten.
Should it go on their permanent record?
Yes, it should.
And so
it violates, as we learned from Elise Stefanik, it violates these schools' codes of conduct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When we come back, we'll talk more. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're also going to talk about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the recent revelations in the New York Times about his medical records, including having a worm in his head, who died. Back shortly.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vody Bauckham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
That cough was brought to you by Bruce Dumont. Nice to have you back this evening on Mother's Day. I didn't have time for the chicken soup during the break. We'll be to calls in just a moment. But again, one of the big pieces of news over the past week has been the story in the New York Times about the medical conditions of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And again, here's a newspaper that hasn't given him much coverage at all, nor has most major newspapers in the United States. And all of a sudden, the story comes across, which is about medical information that he has not shared with the American people that came out in a divorce decree or divorce hearing many, many years ago, about that he testified that he had worms that had climbed inside of his head and they had died, and it's affected his memory loss. And he said, even with, you could put more worms in my head, and I'd still be able to beat Donald Trump and Joe Biden in a debate. So again, it's taken a candidacy that really has been abused and ignored by the mainstream media, which I think is something that Charles Lipson sort of agrees to or agrees with. And it's now become almost a joke that it's now a medical issue involving Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And before we get to your discussion of that, let me mention that, because we've kept you abreast of where Robert Kennedy is on the ballot, this past week he popped up in the state of California, but other states, these are the Kennedy ballot access states, he's on the ballot also. This current graphic that we're showing you does not include California, but California should be included, along with Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Nebraska, Iowa, Texas, Michigan, North Carolina, and New Hampshire. So he's in Hawaii. He's also picking up the pace. But again, the big news is not that he's on the ballot, is that, you know, he had a worm in his head. So Mark, We've not talked a lot about Robert Kennedy. And by the way, he has been invited to be on this program. Representatives of his campaign have been invited to be on his program. We once upon a time, about a month ago, had the Illinois director of the Kennedy campaign on the program. He's the only person speaking for Robert Kennedy that we've attempted to share with you on a Sunday night. And again, a week or so later, this kid was fired from the campaign. So no one from the Kennedy campaign wants to talk about anything, because the only thing they're concerned about is they don't want to answer questions about worms in head. They only want to focus on getting on ballots.
Right.
So that's why they really are not doing any media with anybody. Mark Costello, with that rather lengthy setup, your thoughts?
I've been following the RFK candidacy, and he was on Bill Maher, I think, 2 weeks ago, prior to the worm, and maybe that's why the worm story dropped. But if you go back a year or so ago, he's doing push-ups, he's ripped, he's hiking up and down a mountain every day, he's really out there showing his physical fitness. When we've got President Trump, he's hanging in there, but he does look tired these days. And
yes, he does.
Joe Biden, we know, we've been down this road about Joe Biden. So, Kennedy's voice has that damage,
right?
That also
makes it difficult.
It difficult and challenging for him. But I like that he's a candidate. I like that he's out there changing the conversation. We've got a different conversation related to some of the militarism. He's talking about the corporate power and corruption in the U.S. You don't have a Bernie in the...
Can he win, in your view, can he win any state that would throw the election into the House of Representatives?
I don't think so.
Stephanie?
And I think part of it is, I think his real... Where he's really going to cause some disruption is really among Democrat voters. There's a debate. Does he pull more from Trump, more from Biden? Mm-hmm. I think he pulls more from Biden, only in that he is, and he just announced, is very liberal on social issues. He just came out.
The recent polling, the early polling, suggested that he pulls more from Trump.
Well, it depends, I think, on the poll.
Poll, obviously, we know that, but I want to put that in context.
But what is interesting is he just came out and said that he supports a complete abortion at full term. And I think that is going to really rattle a lot of Republicans, conservatives, even some pro-choice Republicans aren't in support of late term up to full term abortions. And so I think that is going to throw him back into the Democrat camp, and he might actually peel more people off from Biden who want abortion enshrined in a way where that's their number one issue.
Charles Lipson, I go back to you. I mentioned you were not a big fan of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I hope I didn't overstate your position.
No, you didn't. I have written, I think only once, on him, and that was to say how outrageous it was that the Biden administration refused to provide Secret Service protection for him. He had actually been threatened. Yep. His own people stopped the threat. His father was assassinated. His uncle was assassinated. And the idea that they would deny him Secret Service protection is just, to me, outrageous. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to know. Normally, a third-party candidate, if people are voting against the president, then a third-party candidate would attract some of the votes that would otherwise go to the other candidate. But I think it's a negative campaign in which a lot of people will be voting against Biden, a lot of people voting against Trump. So you just don't know which group will go to Kennedy.
Do you think that it has been fair, and no one suggests that politics in America is fair, but do you think it has been fair the way in which the media has treated Robert Kennedy even before this whole, worm in the head story? I mean, he pretty much has been dismissed, either not covered at all, or, viewed exclusively as this anti-vax wacko, Charles.
Well, if he didn't have the last name of Kennedy, he wouldn't be covered at all for
That's
anything.
True. That's true.
And he hasn't held serious office. I mean, I have a lot of criticism of the way that the media operates, but I don't know that I really criticize him at this point unless he begins to build up a higher number, in which case I think it's their duty to cover him. But I think the main issue with the media now is that the media is very segmented, and they tend to operate within their own silo to people who already agree with them.
Should he be included in a debate? Anybody
Only
believe
he
well,
has
they do have a threshold. Yeah. I think, was it 15%? But here's the deal. I mean, does anyone seriously think that Biden is going to debate Trump?
I do.
Do you really? Okay.
I think he
Here's
has
the question.
To.
Does anyone seriously think Biden's going to be the nominee at debate time? But we can joke about that. I don't know that. And I don't know that Trump would want to debate just RFK. I don't know that RFK will hit that. What is it? The 15% threshold.
Well, Trump shouldn't necessarily agree to that. He has said any place, any time with Joe Biden.
Right.
I think there's an expectation that the incumbent president should debate. And the reason why I said what I said in response to, I don't think he's automatically, a loser. Joe Biden proved in the recent Aaron O'Brien, on CNN interview, he proved that he could last an hour. He made a couple of mistakes. Those mistakes would be corrected in the debate, but he was sitting there. I wouldn't demand that anybody stand. I wouldn't demand that Donald Trump stand for 90 minutes.
It's a scripted hour.
But I think that those, the pro-Trump people and the people at Fox News, the cheerleaders at Fox News, that believe that Joe Biden will be a dunce and fall on his face in a debate are not acting in a positive manner.
Well, I think
Biden can rise to the occasion, and I would not dismiss the fact that Donald Trump can make an error.
He rises to the occasion where he has a script and a teleprompter. We know that his interviews, that we know, we've heard enough that interviewers are told what they can and can't ask, and they're given questions. You know, the questions are given to them.
I understand. He knows them in advance.
I don't know that he can think on his feet, so to speak. And the other thing is,
you agree that he would probably study more than Donald Trump?
He will be coached more than Donald Trump. But we are talking September, October. How many is that? 4, 5, 6 months from now.
You know, but
at his age,
but, you know, there's a
decline can happen fast.
You know,
I don't.
I'm a musician when I'm not punditing.
Yeah.
And there's something called muscle memory. You know, so Joe Biden, he has muscle memory. He's been a politician, you know, since he's been breathing, basically. So I think a little bit of cramming for the debate, he can perform.
Some Red Bull or something.
That's it. Yeah.
I mean,
whatever.
Some cookies. He seems to like cookies.
Let me ask you, Bruce. Who has the bigger risk going into a debate?
Well, I think it would hurt Trump more if he lost. If Biden loses, it won't hurt him as much.
I think Trump has more at risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why is that?
Well, hang on. We got break coming up. I'll give my response after the break and give everybody an opportunity to respond as well. We also got callers on the line. We will hear from them when we roll on from Chicago. Happy Mother's Day. I'm Bruce Duman. Don't go away.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Voddie Baucham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide, available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Yes, he is alive. He is well. He's standing, or actually I'm sitting. And it's Mother's Day, and I'm here with all of my favorite people, including a real live mother. How many children?
I have four.
Tell us about them, if you don't mind.
I have one who works for a conservative think tank in Texas.
Yeah.
Worked on the Hill for many years.
Yes.
I have one serving in the armed forces, in the Air Force, overseas.
Two Trump votes.
Have one who's about to graduate from college, hopefully without any disruptions.
Okay.
And I have another one in college. And when I started doing this show, I believe...
You were unwed.
I was still changing diapers. I was changing all those diapers.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
you were changing diapers?
I was still... There were some still in diapers, I think, when I started the show. It's been that long.
Mark, you said something that I've never realized. You said you started listening to this program when you were in your 20s?
Yeah, when I was in my 20s.
And you were a conservative.
Yeah, I used to listen to like AM radio, and you know, I jokingly said Bruce flipped me to be progressive, but it was really, you know, kind of those experiences in working. You know, I was working in a blue collar kind of job at Walmart, and then kind of saw the systems of power operating within corporate America, and how people weren't always getting a fair shake or rising because of their skill. And it just made me realize that, you know, maybe there is some systemic problem happening in America. So over the years.
Well, I'd be curious, Mark, because one of the things that we've seen in the Republican Party is there seems to be a shift. And many will say the Democrat Party has now become the party of the elite. And that the Republican Party is now becoming the party of the working class, blue collar, middle of America. Do you ever see yourself shifting back, or?
I don't, you know, especially not under the Trump era. But you know, I remember
forgotten man, so to speak.
You know, I think, the era of like bipartisanship. I miss those days where people could actually talk and work through an issue. And I certainly think some of the corporate Democratic policies are not the best. So I think I'd like to see some conservatism kind of come back into the Republican Party, less of a cult of personality.
Before the break, I said that I thought that those Republicans and those cheerleaders on Fox News who think that Joe Biden is going to be a big, you know, Dumbo on a debate, if there is a debate, I think there will be a debate. And I think that they are selling the president short. I understand he has all of the issues that have been raised about whether or not he's as strong as he used to be. I don't think anybody is. He's got a couple of years on me, and I lose it from time to time. But the reality is, I think the expectation for Biden will be low. So he will rise to the occasion, as he did in the State of the Union address, where he could have a couple of things memorized from that particular point. And I just think that Donald Trump tends to phone it in, and I just think Donald Trump could overplay his hand. And I dismiss the idea that it's a bad idea for Joe Biden to debate. I think it would be a bigger political negative to him if he chose not to debate or tried to talk himself out or have his people talk him outside of the debate. I want to get Charles Lipson, we have not heard from him, to react to that brilliant assessment that I've made of debates.
Well, I actually surprisingly agree with everything you said, Bruce. But I think
see
I would
how
be...
brilliant that was?
Oh, Charles.
Hey, it was the University of Chicago.
What I wanted to say, Bruce, was that it was surprisingly smart.
Thank you.
A little.
He's a brown nose.
I think I would be surprised if Biden agreed to more than one debate.
Right.
I think, you know, it'll be, boy, I got through that one. But I do think, since we were talking about RFK and the worm in his head, my thought about it was, I have half a mind to run, was that we haven't had any reports on Joe Biden's cognitive health during any of his physicals. They refused to give him out. In fact, they refused to give out basically any of the information from the physicals other than a doctor's statement.
Right.
But I think they're real risk, and I think that the issue is that the decline is likely to continue. That doesn't mean he'll make a mistake in the debate, but I think if you look at those 11-second videos that he's putting out, they have jump cuts in them, Bruce.
Right.
11 seconds. Yeah, right.
Multiple. Yeah.
Yeah, but jump cuts.
No, but okay. I made my point. Well, you know, the powers that be in the White House are going to make a decision as to whether or not he will debate or not, and we'll all kick it around. There will also be, hopefully, a vice presidential debate, which I think could be also very important. And Kamala Harris will be there.
Very much.
But the question is, and you've been waiting for this length of the program to share your thought, at least your candidate du jour.
Yeah. Well, I have been a big fan for a long time of Elise Stefanik. I think she showed some amazing chops when she basically led the hearings against the university presidents. Mm-hmm. She's agile. She's quick. She's smart. She's sharp. She's also, it's interesting, unlike Liz Cheney, Liz Cheney, I think, voted with Trump like 90-some percent of the time. Mm-hmm. When Stefanik took over the House Republican Conference when Liz was booted out, you know, I believe she only had like a 70% matching record.
Mm-hmm.
She tends to be a more moderate and maybe even more openly moderate than a self-professed conservative Nikki Haley was trying to pretend to be. I think that she will be more attractive to moderate women, suburban voters that seem to be, you know, in the Nikki Haley
Here's
camp.
Here's my question.
I think she could bring those voters in.
Question to you, and then I want to give everybody else. In your opinion, does it have to be a woman? Are women only going to be impressed to possibly support Donald Trump if he picks a woman?
I don't think it has to be a woman, but it has to be someone who might be a little bit moderate on the abortion issue, or can at least articulate it in a way that will make suburban women comfortable.
Such as?
What do you mean? In how they
Is there a Republican out there that fits that bill?
I think that Elise Stefanik has been a little bit more moderate.
She's a woman, though.
She is a woman.
Is there a man out there? Let's go across the aisle and ask the Democrats.
Republican males?
Republican males.
Think about that.
Is Mike Johnson going to give up his speakership?
I don't think it'll be him, but they are a good friend. I mean, I do think it. I don't know that it has to be a woman, but I think that in this day, it sort of needs to be a woman. What we're seeing is there's 20% of Republicans that are not voting for Donald Trump in these primaries. Maybe it's just I just want to make my voice heard, my discontent heard, but I'll still vote for him. I think there's going to be a big chunk of that. Mm-hmm. But I do, unless you can bring in someone who would be an even better president than Donald Trump as your VP, like someone like DeSantis, I don't think, Marco Rubio won't be as good a president.
What about Kim Reynolds?
I want to go. Who?
Yeah, Kim Reynolds.
Kim Reynolds of Iowa.
Possibly. She's a DeSantis gal. I don't see her.
Charles, you want to weigh in on who your VP of the month is?
I think that the vice presidential debate will be very important, because I think there are a lot of people who wonder if Joe Biden can make it through the full 4 years. Yeah. And I think the single most important quality of the vice president is how they will do in the debate against Kamala. Mm. And I would say, actually, you hear a lot of names bounced around. I think that actually the name I haven't heard, but I think would be the strongest person, would be Tom Cotton. He's just a really smart, tough guy, and he would continue on. But I like Elise Stefanik. She took down two presidents of Ivy League universities.
Yeah, right.
That's a 7-10 split.
Let's go to Joy in San Diego, California. She has comments for us. She always does. Joy, go ahead.
Well, I was going to comment about the demonstrations, but I can talk about the debate or about RFK, depending on what you want to hear.
Talk about RFK, because we know that you can talk about anything, because you call in every week. But tell me about Robert Kennedy.
I know.
That's okay. Go ahead.
What I found interesting, and I think it was last week, because I listened to the right-wing radio station, and one of them started bringing out RFK's womanizing times, and it seems like that there are folks on the right who are more nervous about Kennedy hurting the Republicans than maybe the Democrats, and so I've heard more bad things being said. Well, I don't know if they say more, but definitely the more far right is putting down Kennedy, and they're coming and they'll say, well, maybe I like this one part of what he says, but then the rest of it is bad.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good point. And again, Kennedy, it's pretty hard to separate Kennedy from womanizing, but
exactly.
That's life in America. 1-800-723-8020. And we have one segment left, and you won't believe what we have on the docket. Normal one.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them.
I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. Michael Cohen will be docket tomorrow in New York in the courtroom, and he has been a man without a gag order. The president, as you know, has had a gag order. Earlier in the program, Stephanie Hitt said that it was probably a good thing for Donald Trump to have a gag order. But again, in the court of public opinion, which is that's the big court that we're really dealing with right now, based on the women that you deal with, and you also talk about that you have a large number of Jewish friends, and you have not put on the record what their thoughts have been about Israel, about Donald Trump, about Joe Biden. So share that news with us right now from your sphere of friends.
What I am hearing is many Jewish friends who maybe were previously liberals. I have a range. There are some who have completely come over to Trump, especially in the on the Israel issue. But even if they're not coming over to Trump, they are voicing alarm and dismay at what they're seeing from the far left of their own party. And they are openly discussing their fear. For those who have high school age kids, they are very clear that they will be considering colleges other than the Ivy Leagues and basically these Northeastern schools, the more elite schools for their kids.
Because
they
why?
Are their kids are afraid of going to campus. They do not want to go where anti-Semitism has been allowed to exist, even if it's been quashed for now, they see that there is a movement and their eyes are starting to wake up. And we can go long back into this. You know, as you know, I was very involved over the last few years in combating critical race theory, DEI, and those kinds of things in the secondary school education. One of those things is they are seeing it in their high schools, and the sort of new Marxian approach to racism. And that is, if you are either an oppressor or an oppressed, and if you are white or white adjacent, you are considered automatically an oppressor, and it is okay to discriminate against you. And that's what we're seeing as a result of this ideology that has crept in. Really, now it's coming in at kindergarten. They're seeing that, and it's now playing out on these college campuses where it's okay to be anti-Semitic.
I want to come back to Charles to see if he agrees with that assessment. Charles?
I do, but I would put a little bit different emphasis on it. I think that there's a split in the Jewish community about what Israel is doing. But I think there's no split in the Jewish community about what's happening on campuses. So even though the campus protests are allegedly about Israel, and to some extent that's real, but I think that this is unprecedented for Jewry. There used to be a kind of quiet anti-Semitism. You couldn't belong to our country club. There was a quota at Yale or whatever. But open anti-Semitism was just unheard of. And we're now seeing it on college campuses. And we're seeing university presidents that don't seem to know what to say or what to do. And that is deeply concerning to Jews in a way, I think, that's quite different from their attachment to Israel, which has faded across generations. So the older people can remember a beleaguered small state, and younger people not so much.
Marcus Allo.
So, you know, I'm certainly, you know, my feelings of, you know, against anti-Semitism are very strong. It's Mother's Day, as Bruce I've mentioned on the show. My mother was displaced from Norway by the Nazi invasion. She was born the week the Nazis invaded Norway. But as a college professor, one of my concerns has been that the charges of anti-Semitism can have a chilling effect on conversation. There's certainly real anti-Semitism out there. I'm not denying that. But I do think we need a space for criticality, critical discussion, questions about colonialism, the displacement of people from their homes in Palestine that has happened. There's real conversations to have and real critique of the Netanyahu government. And I feel like sometimes we don't have the space to have that conversation because it's too easy to – anti-Semitism is such a powerful signifier, and we know what that means. And historically what it's meant in this country and around the world. So
I want to praise Mark. Charles. I want to praise Mark and praise you, Bruce. Stephanie, you too. because I wish we had more conversations like this on college campuses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think
Absolutely.
One of the worst things that's happened to colleges, it has been a sense that you can't have these conversations, that If you're in Mark's position, you think people like Stephanie are just out of bounds. And if you're in Stephanie's position, you think people like Mark are out of bounds. I'm not saying you two individually. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that people who have those views tend not to talk with each other.
Right.
And I think one of the things that's wonderful about Beyond the Beltway and has been for years is that you've always tried to have liberals and conservatives, and almost always there's a real conversation. It's just sad that students at a place that ought to foster conversations don't buy into that.
Quick question. Can you be anti-Israel without being anti-Semitic, Charles?
You can be up to a point. If you think that there's no right for the state to exist at all, if you're saying, as some college students were, go back to Poland, then that's anti-Semitic. even though it may not say anything about Jews directly. It's the largest Jewish state in the world. Yes, you can be against their policies. You can be in favor of redrawing their boundary. But if you're in favor of terrorism, if you're in favor of wiping out the state, that's any minute.
Okay. Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, Professor Emeritus, has joined us. Stephanie Hitt, our card-carrying Republican conservative. Mark Casello, our college professor from the College of Calumet. He's been with us. Happy Mother's Day. Our thanks to Fritz Goldman for his assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.